Hi, and welcome to the In the Cortex podcast. We are your hosts. I'm Paloma Garcia.
And I am Danny Periconi.
And we're the founders of In the Cortex, an online community with programs that show people the tools that they need to change their lives through brain reorganization. No medication, just movement.
When you get your brain out of survival mode and regulate your nervous system, you start to live in the fun, logical part of the brain, the cortex. Subscribe today and learn how to live your best in the cortex life. And now, on to today's episode.
Okay, welcome back to another podcast from In the Cortex. I am Danny, and I'm here with Paloma, and we are your founders of In the Cortex. And we have a really exciting episode today, talking about something that a follower asked us to talk about, and It was all about dyslexia. And so we're going to break this down from a brain perspective. It's going to feel a little overwhelming because it is a lot of things.
A lot of information.
Yes. So we're going to do our best to simplify it. And if this is something that resonates with you, or if there's things that come up that really hit home for you, just know that we're all learning together. And we hope you can just tune into that space of being receptive and open to hearing this information. And the biggest part is that you understand that there's something you can do about it.
Exactly.
And that's our mission here at In the Cortex, is to share the information and then how you can help yourself live a more peaceful, harmonious, and easier life, just in a nutshell. So Let's break it down, Paloma.
Let's break it down. So let's just start really quickly with talking about what dyslexia even is. Most of you have probably heard about it. If not, if you don't already know somebody that has dyslexia, because it's actually very common. And it affects the way that people read, write, and spell. So how the ease of reading, writing, and spelling. And it has a lot to do, of course, it's classified as a learning disorder, because what do we usually do in school? And when we're learning things, we're reading, writing, spelling, and doing all that stuff. And it really affects the way that we see words on the page, and we're able to interpret them visually, and the way that we're able to interpret them as information, right? So it's not just what do they look like on the page, but what do those letters on the page together mean in my brain, right? So it has a lot to do also with decoding and the way that we're interpreting language as well. And today what we want to really focus on is looking at which specific reflexes are related to the challenges that dyslexia encompasses, right? So just so we can get it to be very as straightforward as possible. And always keep in mind that there's a lot of overlap with these things. Yeah, it's not just black and white, and it's not like you have this, so then you have that. You know, it's a lot of, there's really a symphony going on in our brain, let's say. Mm-hmm. And we want to read really quickly a text that explains primitive reflexes, in case you're newer to the podcast, or in case you maybe kind of need a little bit of a refresher. We know that is always useful, from the Child Development Center in London. It's an amazing institution. They do a lot of primitive reflex work as well. And so this is what they have on their website. We are born with a whole range of reflexes, a set of instinctive, involuntary reactions to a certain stimulus. These reflexes have evolved over millennia to aid our passage from the womb, to protect us from harm in our vulnerable early months, and to provide rudimentary training for later voluntary skills. And if it all goes according to nature's plan, all the fetal and primitive reflexes follow a similar pattern. They initiate in the uterus, become integrated into the neural system. This lays down the pattern for future controllable actions and responses, and then inhibits when it's time to move on to the next developmental stage. Nearly all these reflexes should inhibit by the time the baby is 1 year old. We'll take that with a grain of salt, because some people it's 2.5 years old, we've seen. So always take that with a grain of salt. But it's important to realize that these early reflexes are located in the most primitive area of the brain, the brainstem, and they operate involuntarily. They're not voluntary. That means we simply cannot control them. As we develop, the higher parts of the brain, the cortex, which is responsible for thinking and reasoning, and the midbrain, the organization center of the motor and sensory systems, take over the functions of the primitive reflexes. These functions are then transformed into responses and actions that can be consciously controlled or modified. So that's when they become conscious, is when the primitive brain finishes developing, and we're operating from the cortex, the higher centers of the brain. If the primitive reflexes fail to inhibit, however, the more sophisticated neural structures of the brain, that means the cortex, along with the postural reflexes, cannot develop properly. The normal development of motor and processing skills and the integration of left and right sides of the brain are affected. The child is stuck with immature responses to their environment. So act your age might literally be an impossibility for them. So that's just a really, I love the way that they talk about how it's involuntary and voluntary, right? Because we think, you know, we look at behavior and we think that things that people do
control
and the way
it.
That we react, the way we act, that we can control it. But that's where this gives us so much empathy, right? For looking at our own brains and looking at other people's brains and saying, whoa, that is not on purpose. They can't control that, right? Mm-hmm. And so that's where it's good to take a deep breath and say, okay, this is where I can help my brain get more organized and really truly operate from the cortex, which is the way that we're meant, quote unquote, to operate in this world, right? And that's, at least that's the way that the world is set up.
Right.
The logic of the world, right?
And from that is everything is done through movement, right? So we know when babies are in utero, we feel kicks, we feel movement. We know babies are turning and twisting around. We're like, oh, look at that. And there's so much to it. So this is where we want to help you understand that the way you naturally do something gives so much information as to where your brain is at. And the cool part is the brain is so plastic. It can take this information at any age in your life right now, and it can help you do it more efficiently. So if you give it the right fuel, all of a sudden now your brain can now process it for what it was meant to do. And that's why we love the work we do, because there is so much hope. There is so much chance to go back and rewrite your story. Start right now. Our oldest participant is 90 years old.
Yeah.
So with all that being said, we're going to break down the reflexes that are really connected to what we call dyslexia. And we're not really big fans of labels here, because it really kind of, if you get the diagnosis that you have dyslexia, you sit there and go, okay, great. Now what do I do about this? Like, do I just always have a handicap when it comes to learning? And then that internalizes for a lot of people that I'm stupid, I'm dumb, I just don't operate the way I need to, right? And our take is, no, that's not helping you. How about we look at the reflexes? When those reflexes aren't integrated, meaning lying dormant because they've done all the things that they need to do, so now they don't have to be keeping you in survival mode anymore, then once they have done their job and they're lying dormant, now we can let that cortex come online and do what it's designed to do.
And so, we live more voluntary. We live in that voluntary space, right? Where we can truly
respond,
control.
Respond, right?
Exactly.
And you can respond versus react.
Just really quick also to add, that's not saying that we're saying that dyslexia doesn't exist. We're saying that let's reframe it. Let's look at it differently.
Yeah.
Let's look at it as, what can we do about this, these challenges and difficulties that I'm feeling or that my child is feeling or somebody that I know, instead of let's put a name on it and then make it feel like there's something wrong with me, right? Because that's not what this is about. The whole point is that we can, there's so much we can do to make life so much easier.
Yes, 100%. So, and this is what's so cool is that you have everything within you. And this is what we teach you in our program, is how to look at the movements and how to make sense of them, and then how to do them differently and more efficiently. So that way your brain's like, okay, cool, I can now move on to the next level.
Exactly.
And I love this so much, because as we were doing our research for this podcast, I was really connecting dots with so many people I know. I was like, oh my gosh, it's this. And while we think, like, from a very conscious standpoint, like, oh, I'm just not good at this, we have to remember what society has created, right?
Yes.
We've created this world of, we go to school and we learn, we sit down and we learn in the space of taking information in visually through our auditory senses. We're just starting to bring in movement as a concept, right? Of like, kids need to move to learn. And think about all the learners out there, because there are so many different types of learning that are done through hands-on, tactile, kinesthetic approaches. What happens to their brain when they're not getting the right information the way that suits their preference and helps them intake information? So if you are resonating with the dyslexic profile and your decoding is off, or you're reversing things, that could just mean that your preference is not in auditory or in visual information.
Learning. Yeah,
yeah.
absolutely.
And And Paloma and I have both experienced this because we were talking about this too really quick, was when we were, you know, before brain reorganization era, I was very much the athletic movement person, very hands-on and kinesthetic. Sitting down at a desk and like having to intake information was painful and really hard for me. I had to work really, really hard. And then Paloma, it was easier for her, but her brain in the movement world was really challenging. She was just like, not for me. I'm going to be more of what we'd say like the nerdy kid. And I was more of like the jock kid, right?
Yeah.
And so we start in our society start to like classify people as like, totally. Oh, that's just how you are. But have we ever thought of it as that's just the preference in which you learn and how you intake information? Like, yeah. That's kind of crazy, right? So we're all smart. We're all beautiful beings. And that's what we're trying to share is helping you find that light within you.
Yes.
It's so important to understand how the brain is developing. So Paloma already mentioned the reflexes, the lower centers of the brain, they're doing really important jobs from utero till about 2.5 years of life. Then from that point forward, now we're in the space for about like until we're close to 8 years old, we're figuring out our dominance. We're figuring out what side of the brain we prefer to use, what eye we prefer to use. And we start figuring out the dominance in which our brain is intaking information. And there's so much research about like where you live in the world, how the information is presented to you as a kid that affects this. So it's important to know that if you are working with a child or someone younger and they're still reversing letters and they're still not getting certain facts, well, maybe it's because their brain just isn't ready to do this yet. Mm-hmm. And about 8 years old is when the brain's ready to come online and start really picking, how do I intake information? So this is something really important to know. And this is why our society, again, is a little backwards on why we're teaching kids to read and write at 4 or 5 years old. It's just, we're not designed to do it. So that's a plug for a different podcast. Anyways, go ahead and explain to us, Paloma, the concept of some of the reflexes and how they have overlap with dyslexia.
Absolutely. So dyslexia has a lot to do, of course, with the eyes, and that's kind of, you know, natural. And a lot of people that actually start to show some learning challenges or learning difficulties in the classroom, the very first thing that they're going to be checked for is visual, right? Visual challenges, visual impairment, whatever it might be. That's usually what people, professionals and teachers and doctors will look at first. And it's important to take into account that auditory processing also plays hand in hand with dyslexia because it's the way that we're processing the world. So just think about this as we go through these reflexes. For us to be able to interpret information from the page adequately or efficiently, our eyes, our visual, our auditory systems, and our vestibular systems all need to be working pretty efficiently because the eyes, of course, are the ones that are processing the actual words, right? The ears are also processing the sounds that made us understand what the words were, right? So when we learned the language, that's where that came from, right? So that's how we're putting knowledge and actually bringing together what the meaning is. And our vestibular system, believe it or not, has so much to do with it because that's the vestibular system is our relationship with gravity. It's our balance. And so it tells us where we're balanced and where the center is of whatever we're looking at, whatever we're hearing, whatever we're experiencing. It's very important because we have two sides of our brain and two sides of our body, for our body to always know what the center point is of anything that we're trying to do, right? And operate, because we need that point of convergence for anything that we're interpreting. Mm. So that's just to set the stage. So the Moro, for example, is the reflex that is our infant startle reflex. And so the Moro has a lot to do with the way that we process our sounds and the way that we process light and changes in light. And so if our Moro is not integrated and it's still present at the age when we're trying to read, it might be interpreting sounds that are way too loud or not loud enough. And so that's interfering with the way that we're processing what we have on the page. And once again, language and all the other stimuli that are around us. It also might be that if our Moro is on, we're very, very sensitive to light. So if we don't have the right lighting in our classroom where we're trying to learn to read, then that's going to make it really, really hard for our eyes to actually be able to focus, to literally focus, find the focal point of each word that we're reading or writing or looking at the board. And think about the type of lighting that most schools have. It's fluorescent lighting, and fluorescent lighting is very, very abrasive to the eyes, especially to a brain that is in survival mode, because we process that even more intensely, right? A lot of people that have a more reflex that is present and that is not integrated much prefer to be in like lower light. You know, you'll go into their house and all the lights are dimmed, or the room, you know, the dark curtains are drawn down all the time. And that's because it's just so overwhelming to their system. And they figure out a compensation of like, I'm just going to get rid of the light.
100%. And really quickly, when a baby we want the baby to have this moral reflex on, and it's literally activated by any time there's like a loud sound. So if you make a loud noise, you notice that a baby will naturally will fling open their arms, their hands will open up, and then they'll have a big gasp, a big breath of air, and then they start crying, their skin turns red, and it's like the system is like ready to go, right? Oh, survival time. And then once they realize there's no threat, they curl back into whatever sleeping position they are. So you see this activated time and time again in the first like 2 months of life. So imagine this, if a baby doesn't get to do that enough, it stays on and active because the brain's like, I didn't go through the right period of getting this thing integrated. So then these kids are in classrooms with constantly activating this survival mechanism of it's time to go, it's time to survive. And it's like, could you imagine? And we did. I used to have this on very later in life.
Me too.
Where everything felt like fight or flight mode.
A threat. Absolutely. So,
of course, this is going to affect your learning because you're like, threat where? Who what?
Exactly. You know? And it's once again, it's not conscious, right? No. It's
involuntary.
Involuntary. It's not voluntary. So our brain, you know, even though logically we know it's just a classroom, it's just a letter on the page, our primitive brain is like, absolutely not. This is life or death, bro. Let's get out of this. Right. And so that's where we're tripping up our whole nervous system when all we need to do is all we need to do, quote unquote, is read a letter. Right. But there's just so much more. And that's why this stuff is so complex, because we can't see what's going on inside of somebody else's brain. And so I think it can be so frustrating for teachers, for parents to be like, you know, that they said this on the Child Institute, the Development Institute as well, their website. Then they say, act your age is physically impossible, right? And so that's where we have those huge disconnects. And we're like, what's going on with this person's mind? Well, that might be what it is, right? It's involuntary.
100%.
Then we have the ATNR, the asymmetrical tonic neck reflex. And so we're not going to get too much into what each reflex does in this podcast, because we will be here for 17 days straight. And that's just too long. You know, it's too long for a podcast. I don't think we'd even be able to upload. So if you want more information on each specific reflex, we have so much info on our Instagram, and we have the Basics of Brain Reorganization, which is a program that is free. You can find it at the link in bio of our Instagram page. And we also have podcast episodes that have talked about this in the past. So there's a lot of ways to get this information. But the asymmetrical tonic neck reflex has a lot to do with our balance as well, our vestibular system, remember that, knowing left from right, because what it does is it's kind of like, it creates like a, or it has like a wall in between the two hemispheres, right? So we have our left hemisphere and our right hemisphere. And in the middle, we have a little bundle of nerves that's called the corpus callosum. And the corpus callosum is there to connect the two hemispheres, right? When our ATNR is not integrated, so it's still present, it's like it creates this huge, massive wall in between the two hemispheres. So what does that mean? It's going to be a lot harder to do anything that involves crossing the midline, any sort of cross laterality. What's the number one thing you need to do when you're reading? Cross the midline, because you're going from left to right, right? And so that's something that a lot of people will notice, right? With kids that have the challenges with reading or dyslexia specifically, is that they have a really hard time going from left to right, or they'll lose their spot, right? So they're reading, and then they're like, well, and you kind of are like, why did they not read that word? Well, their eyes literally just jumped from one page of the part of the page to the other, right? And so that's something that's really important to not have. So to have that reflex integrated. This also, because of that difference between the left and right hemisphere, is going to have ambiguity in their laterality, right? So not necessarily knowing which hand is which, first of all, which one's the left and which one's the right, and not knowing which hand to use to pick up a pencil. You know, if you haven't really had that laterality, if your hemispheres aren't connected, it's hard to really establish a dominant side, first of all. And then on top of that, you're confusing it all the time. That makes it even harder. And when you're writing, when you'll see how when children are writing, and this goes hand in hand, this is dysgraphia more than dyslexia, but it usually goes hand in hand, is when writing, if they're turning their head to one side, then they have a complete flexion of the other side of their body. And so what that creates is also kind of like a disconnect between the hand and the eye. And so the hand-eye coordination is going to be really hard. And that, of course, is extremely important for when you're writing on a page.
Right. And the ATNR is really looked at as the eye tracking reflex. So that's what Paloma said, is being able to get your eyes to track effortlessly across without skipping a beat. And here's the thing, like so many times when this sort of stuff happens, and so many of our participants will be like, oh my gosh, all of a sudden my son's hitting the baseball at baseball practice, or all of a sudden when I go and my teenager's learning how to drive and they look over their shoulder, the car's not going with them anymore, right? Because that'll happen. So it's whenever the head turns, that hand, that arm will have that natural reflex to want to straighten and then open. Because when a baby's doing this, they're lying on their back with their head turned down the straight arm. So think about how much extra you're having to work every time your head turns. You want your head to independently rotate and move without your arms going with it. As a baby, you want that connected, but not when you're older and not when we're trying to learn to read and write and do all the things. Exactly. So this is a massive reflex. This one you could really see effortlessly. If you want to check on your child really quick, you can just take your finger out in front of their eyes and you can have them track smoothly from left to right. Can their eyes stay on your finger without turning their head, and can they keep their eyes in a smooth pursuit going left or right?
If you have a kid that you already know has a little bit of a challenge with visual things, I would do something bigger than the finger, because sometimes a finger might even be too small for them to focus on. So if you take like a big eraser or one of these little Lego pieces, put it on the top of a pen, and that'll make it easier to check it.
And if they do turn their head when they're tracking, you just ask, do you think you're moving your head right now? And they'll be like, nope. You go, okay, great. That's information. Again, we're building compassion for understanding why we do what we do. And we're not trying just to correct it and let them know they're doing everything wrong. We want them to understand, oh my gosh, this is a reflex. Remember, what is it? It's involuntary. They cannot override it. It has to go, this is why we say, through the movement. It has to be done through the root, so it's effortless and they don't have to think about it.
Exactly. It's not about getting it right. It's about what information is this giving me about this person's brain, right? And it doesn't have to be a child, by the way. Then we have the spinal gallant reflex is a reflex that is mostly there for the movement of the fetus in the uterus to get out through the birth canal. But it also works as a conductor for the sound vibration. So remember, sound, we hear it as sound and melody and, you know, the cadence of somebody's voice, but it really is all just vibration. And so that's from the time you're in the uterus, it's important for your body to start to adapt and understand how to process these vibrations as sound. And so if the spinal gallant reflex is retained, then we're going to have a lot of difficulty with understanding and processing sound. So that's another thing, right, with the auditory processing that goes hand in hand with the dyslexia. And it's also going to help synchronize the upper and lower body, because it usually is active. Well, it is active in the lumbar area. So it's kind of like we have the left and right midline, and then we have the top and bottom midline. And so the spinal gallant really helps with both of those. And this sounds like it doesn't have that much to do with reading. But once again, if you go back to what we said in the beginning, knowing where your center is extremely important for being able to read. So if you don't even know where your own body center is, how are you supposed to find the center of the page and the word and the thing that you're trying to interpret, right?
It's so much. And also this reflex looks like if it's on for a child, they have like ants in their pants.
Yeah,
So that
they're
means
like.
they're always constantly wiggling and fidgeting and they can't sit still. And then you tell them to pay attention. They're like, to what? Because everything is overwhelming their system right now. So they can't hold their focus on anything. So how do you decode sounds? How do you look at words on the page? And when your brain is not able to process out what's not important. So this child
Exactly.
is always going to be, and usually like the dyslexic profile very much matches the ADD, ADHD profile because
Often.
there's a lot of connection there. And again, let's look at the reflexes and how much of those reflexes are connected when you read what's connected to each reflex. So instead of
Exactly.
seeing them as just always being distracted, it's like, huh, what, and I will say, schools have figured a lot of this stuff out and they've figured out workarounds to help with the compensation. So they put those
Totally.
vestibular cushions under their child so the child can wiggle
Can
or they
wiggle.
sit on balls, right? We see this a lot now. But the problem with that is if it's still involuntary, guess what that ball turns into? An even bigger distraction.
Yeah,
And then we're
exactly.
playing with the fidget spinners and all those things and whatever it is. And then they become a distraction. So we're not, again, addressing the root. So the
Exactly.
next reflex we're going to talk about is the tonic-labyrinthine reflex, which we call it the TLR. This one is really like when the eyes begin to converge and look at one point together. So it's the eye teaming, eye convergence. And this comes from, so when a child starts to be able to get on their hands and knees, this is such an important reflex to be able to come out and do its job. Because if you avoid and never crawl, remember when the CDC took out crawling as a major milestone? We all
True.
shook our heads, right? Because the way you put your hands down on the floor literally will tell us what's going on with this reflex right here. So you can try this. Go ahead, get on your hands and knees. Look at what position your hands naturally want to go to. So many people naturally want to put their hands out to the side. And it's a direct indication that your eyes cannot team. And then imagining trying to look at one point on the page with both your eyes is really hard. So
That's
then
something that I still struggle with. I need to work on my TLR, and I notice that if when I don't crawl and I don't creep for a while, my eyes, I'll see a picture of myself and be like, oh my gosh, my eyes are not teaming. Actually, I can do it right now. If you want to check somebody's eye teaming, you can also do the same thing with the pen or pencil, and you're gonna hold it out kind of like as far as a paper would be, right? From where you're reading, and then extend your arm or kind of go arm's length away from that. And you're going to ask them to focus on one part, right? So here Danny's focusing on the yellow part. I'm going to be focused on the blue part of my pen right here. Follow it, and you're slowly going to bring it in closer. Can you see my eyes, Danny? Here.
It's easier when someone else does it for you, but yeah, you can see that your right
And then
eye
out. And my eyes, like, that hurt my eyes. And then I'm
is
bringing it back in. And usually you can see that one eye
now
will
you
go
can
in a little
see.
bit slower and one will go a little bit faster. I don't know which one was which.
Yeah.
Did this
Well,
go
first
in
your right one
faster?
wasn't going in as much, and then your left eye. So you were picking. You're like, one eye can do it, the other I can't. So they're not doing it
There you
as a
go.
team.
There you go. It's one or
And
the other.
yeah. So then these people will close one eye. They'll tilt their head. They'll cover their eye when they're working. And then again, they're not able to just process the information for what it is because it's getting skewed.
It's
Everything's
getting
coming in
skewed.
skewed.
Plus, if your one eye is looking, so this is where it's also very interesting. The of course the visual system, which we're going to talk about in a little bit, just right after the reflexes. But if one eye is looking at one part of the word and the otherwise eye is looking at the other part of the word, you have to fill in the middle. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like there's also like your two eyes are. It's just
Communication.
again. Just more things for your brain to be processing all at the same time when you're supposed to be reading a word and like immediately knowing exactly what it says. And it's just once again where those expectations of like at your age, reading at age level or at grade level, whatever it is, all in quotation marks, that's where we're like, how about reading at brain level, not at eight? Oh,
Oh, what good
wait,
slogan.
that was really good. That was
Read at
really good.
your brain
Reading at
level.
brain level. Forget about
Ask
age, forget
us
about
what your brain
grade.
level is.
Let's read at brain
That
level. Seriously. Okay, that was really good.
was so good.
Okay.
Yeah. So the last reflex then is the symmetrical tonic neck reflex. And this is when you're able to readjust from one distance to another effortlessly. So if you're looking down at your paper, you look up to the whiteboard, or you come down to the whiteboard, or I literally see this in my child copying from one piece of paper to the next, where you're literally just turning your head and looking from one piece to the next. So this is the natural ability to do so. If you were not given the opportunity to get this reflex integrated, of course this is going to be hard. Of course you're going to mix up your letters and your words. And of course you're going to look like you have a challenge when it comes to all sorts of learning.
All of these learning things. And this is something really interesting that was in the book, The Reflexive Learning and Behavior. If you're a podcast listener, you know we reference this book all the time. It's our absolute fave. And there's a part where she's talking about Trevor Roper, who is a researcher. And that is somebody who was looking at all the visual components of learning and kind of looking at the up close vision versus far away, right? And so the people that are myopic, that means that you can see up close and much harder for you to see far away, just happen to have a tendency for more activities that are done up close, like reading, like writing, like art, right? Like drawing. Mm-hmm. And the people that have the opposite have much more of a tendency to go toward much more, you know, out there things, right? So sports and things that are further away, right? They like to look at telescopes and they like to do the different, you know, things that are further away because that's what's easiest for them. So these are also things that we chuck up to personality, but a lot of the time, and that's what you were saying in the beginning of the podcast, it's not just our personality, it's our brain. And so you might be somebody who's just decided, oh, you know, I'm more bookish, I'm really not into sports, but it's just because your brain couldn't do it. So once you give your brain that ability, then you can explore also a different facet of who you are as a person, which is also really cool.
Oh, I love that. And think about too, when you're on your hands and knees, this distance of where your hands are to where your head's at is such a big deal because this is your reading distance. This is how you're interpreting information in front of you. So 100%. That's really setting the stage for how are you going to be able to process this information when you're at that space when it's time to do it.
100%.
Okay. That was just addressing the reflexes, okay?
Yes.
So the reflexes, we have to remember this. They are always interweaving with all the other sensory systems happening. Plus, we've got our lower brain, which is our creeping and our crawling. Yep, the pons and midbrain. And that is when you're doing specific movements like creeping, like on your belly where you're moving from point A to point B. That when you're doing that movement, it's bringing in the reflexes that are during that time period to work together. Mm-hmm. And then when you go into your crawling phase, when you hit about 6 months of age, then you're bringing in all the reflexes that are geared towards your crawling and all your midbrain functions. So this is why it's so important. You can't just do primitive reflex integration. You can't just go creep and crawl. You have to do both pieces of it because it will affect our auditory system. It'll affect our visual system, affect our vestibular, our proprioceptive, all the systems that are finally working together. So it's so much. Like, we think babies don't do anything in that first year, but holy cow.
Holy cannoli. It's so much. And just really quickly to illustrate, we're not going to get too deep into the auditory and the visual systems, but this I think is really interesting is the way that we process sounds, the auditory part of the brain is in the left hemisphere. Mm-hmm. And that means that when we process sounds through our right ear, we are doing a much more efficient job because our right ear goes directly into the left hemisphere to process, and then we're able to understand what that sound was. Mm-hmm. When we listen through our left ear, this is listening, not hearing, listen through our left ear, we have to go into the right hemisphere because that's the way our brain is wired, right? Left side is the right hemisphere. And then we have to jump over. Remember, if you have that retained ATNR, that's going to be hard to jump over this brick wall and then get to the left side to the auditory processing. And then we're able to understand what it means, right? Or to process that sound for, you know, further and more like the higher centers. And so when we're learning to process sounds, we are kind of like fine tuning the balance between the left and the right ears and which is going to be our dominance. And it has been established that people that have a right ear dominance have a much easier time of interpreting sounds, of hearing, of auditory processing sounds. And of course, that goes hand in hand with reading, right? Because what you're hearing then becomes what you know, what you learn, and then what you read goes hand in hand with that. Remember, we talked about that in the beginning. Yeah. So If you have a little bit more of a tendency to go to the left ear, then this might be, once again, adding another piece onto all the stuff that your brain has to process. So without going too much into the detail of that, I want everybody who's listening to the podcast right now to do a quick little test. I want you to stand in front of a wall, look at the wall, and imagine that on the other side of the wall is the best, juiciest piece of gossip you've ever heard in your life. Okay. You're like, oh my God, I need to hear this so bad. So now I want you to slowly get closer to the wall and put your ear up to the wall to listen to that juicy gossip. Which ear did you favor? Was it the right or the left? And now think about it. And what does that tell you about your brain with what you just heard?
That is your dominant ear. You can do this for all of your, senses, right? So you can figure out what is your dominant ear when it comes to hearing. And then also, what is your dominant eye? The eye is not as key, but having them work together is super important. So if you want to put your eye through a telescope, like which eye do you close? Which eye do you keep open? Which is your dominant? So I know I have a left dominant eye and have a right dominant ear. And what's so crazy is when we dive into all of this, I always like to talk about my son because he's such an amazing sport and he understands this stuff because we talk about it and he's not even 8 yet. But he has a dominant left ear and we didn't check his eyes, but I'm not sure about that. But anyways, he has a dominant left ear, but I also know he doesn't have his symmetrical tonic neck reflex integrated all the way. And so this is the piece. Here's the information. I just talked to his teachers and, you know, they're amazing. They're so sweet. And they're like, Danny, I think we should talk about maybe a learning disability. Like, do you think Axel has one? And I just confidently like, okay, cute. Thanks for your feedback. But I'm not going to take that because then that puts this pressure on me of, oh, great. Now what?
And on him.
And on him. And, oh, something's wrong. So instead of me spiraling, which I would have done before all this work, I just go, you know what? I'm glad that other people can see this, but I'm going to give you a different take because this is what our goal is to normalize that we're all different, but normalize that you can do something about it to ease whatever challenge you're facing in your day. So for Axel, and this goes for a lot of people, and we say this every time, if you have retained primitive reflexes as a child and you don't do anything about it, they turn into retained primitive reflexes as a teenager and as an adult and so on and so on. And how many times have you seen adults that just can't act right? You're like, okay, what is it? Right? There's a lot of things. But anyways, so for Axel, it's like, okay, instead of him just being diagnosed as a learning disability, what if we looked at it and say, oh my gosh, he's working so much harder than he needs to because he has a left ear dominance, which we now know he has to process things differently, and he has retained primitive reflexes. And the cool part is yes, you can do stuff to help with your dominance. But the more important thing that you can do right now is you can go integrate your symmetrical tonic neck reflex. You can integrate all your other reflexes and we can keep working on all of our other good stuff. So then he has hope and then he's not sitting there going, great, now I'm just going to be stupid and not, you know, ever able to achieve things. And now we can help him understand, well, what kind of learning helps? What preference do you have for learning? How do you prefer to learn? And I already know about Axel. He likes to move. Movement's his language of learning. So let's get this kid moving and let's not put him in a traditional classroom because he won't thrive. He needs to do something that is out of the box because that's how he's going to find his true potential. So that's just something that we want to make sure you all understand is that we're all about options and hope.
And then when it comes to the visual system, learners, this is a really interesting one. And also the way to check if you're left or right eye dominant, by the way, is also to just kind of imagine that you're looking at something, you're looking at the gossip. You're not listening to it this time, but it's kind of far away. And so which eye do you go to cover if you really want to focus on what you do? If I tell you to cover one eye to be able to really focus on something you're seeing, which one do you cover? And so the one that's uncovered is your dominant eye. And this is just a tiny little tidbit, and then we'll end the episode. Learners with left eye dominance will initially want to look at the right side of the page first and then move to the left. So in the Western world where we read from left to right, this makes it just that much harder because the dominant eye is the one that sets the stage for reading. Even though, of course, they're both teaming, or what ideally they're both teaming, they're both looking at the same spot. The one that's leading it is the dominant eye, right? And so if the reflexes are getting in the way as well, that's just extra work for the eyes. So if you're somebody with the left eye dominance, just take that into account as well as like a little bit extra stuff that's going on in your brain that might be making it a little bit harder.
Yeah. And so that's what this is all about. So you can look at it as there's just more to it. There's more to the story. And when, you know, you go get a diagnosis and they tell you you have dyslexia, you just go, oh, okay, this means that there's reflexes on. That means that I can go integrate them. That means I have a different dominance profile and I need to take information in differently. And it's just the more you know about you, you can help navigate and make your life just so much easier.
So much easier.
And that's what we're here to do at In the Cortex, is just normalize all of this and help you understand that there's simple movements. There are simple movements you can do daily that my four-year-old does alongside me. So they're simple. We have 90-year-olds that are doing it. And you do it daily, and then your brain's like, okay, cool. Now I know I can see the world for what it is versus distorting it and tweaking it and making everything skewed. So if you have questions about anything we talked about today, please send us an email at hello@inthecortex.com. We have a super amazing program coming out April 1st with Dr. Greer Kirschenbaum, and she is a neuroscientist and a doula, and we're doing a parenting program with her, and it's going to be revolutionary.
Amazing.
So yep. Please sign up, and we have a special BOGO for that, so stay tuned for that.
Oh, yeah. Buy one, get one. So do it with a friend. Bring in the accountability and the excitement, the motivation that comes with doing something together with your friend. It's for your own sake. It's for your family's sake and for your kids' sake, whether you have them or not yet. which is the case for me, of course. And are we going to do it again? Let's just talk about our social media, shall we?
Yes.
Oh, there we go. Our social media. In the Cortex_US is the Instagram, the gram for all the baddies out there who like to abbreviate. In_the_cortex, that's our TikTok. In the Cortex_US is also our FB or our Facebook. And our YouTube channel is In the Cortex_US as well, I believe.
Yeah.
I don't actually know that right now. Yes, it is. Okay.
And our website.
Website inthecortex.com, and just always reach out. We're super excited for the program. Make sure you secure your spot for the program before March 29th, because there's going to be a lot of stuff to like look over. So we want you to have some time before we get started. And that's really when we're closing off the signups. Of course, if you have extenuating circumstances and you message us afterward, we'll see what we can do, but we really want to get everybody in there so that on April 1st, Monday, April 1st, we're starting with everybody, and it's going to be just the coolest thing ever. So yeah.
And please share and subscribe and tell your friends about our podcast and rate it and let everybody know that life can get easier. Yes, it's that simple. You just have to do some movements and then all of a sudden your life just gets easier. And we live this and we just want the world to know about this because we see so many people that are feeling challenges, and these are tools that will help you get further along on your journey to really just really enjoy this experience of being human, right? So
that's all about, baby girl.
Share it with all your friends. Thank you all for listening. We appreciate you, and you have an amazing rest of your week.
Thank you.
Bye.